were ready, the guys settled in for the hard part, the wait. About dinner time, we got ready to go over to Danny's. Little Bit was on the floor of the living room, playing with a bunch of small plastic animals. I asked if she were hungry, and she immediately jumped up. "I'm starving," she shouted. She was holding a plastic snake, its tail draped on the floor. Seeing that, I smiled. "Let me see that." She handed me the snake, and I observed that it was nearly 3 feet long and almost as big as a paper towel tube. I looked at her. "You want to have some fun?" Her eyes lit up. "Yeah. What are you going to do?" I knelt down. "Mr. Thad is scared of snakes. Let's take this out and put it in the garden. He goes out there every day after supper. It'll scare him good." She jumped up and down, clapping her hands. "Oh, yeah, let's do it. It'll scare him good." "You shouldn't do that. If he's afraid of snakes, why would you do that?" Mel asked. I looked at the snake, then at her.
"'Cause it's funny."
"I bet he won't be laughing about it."
"Oh, sure he will, eventually," I replied with a chuckle.
As she rounded the corner into the kitchen, Mel replied, "You still shouldn't do it." I followed her around the corner. She was wiping down the counter, and I came up behind her. Wrapping my arms around her from behind, I said, "I love you." Without pausing from her cleaning, she asked in a very sarcastic tone, "What do you want?" I spun her around. "It's not what I want, it's what you want." I reached into my pocket and took the Tiffany's box out and held it behind my back. She tried to look behind me. "What do you have? What are you doing?" Obviously, she wasn't over the little incident on the porch. "Nothing," I said. She tried to look again, and I swiveled. Narrowing her eyes, she said, "You better not be up to anything." I brought the box around where she could see it and held it up. "I just thought you might want this." Seeing the blue box, her eyes lit up. Then the excitement faded. "Where'd you get it? You didn't take it off a dead body, did you?" I stepped back. "No! That's really messed up. Here I am trying to give you a present, and this is how you act?" I went to put the box back in my pocket. "If you don't want..." She cut me off and grabbed the box from my hand. "I didn't say that." She opened the box and took the cuff out. Smiling, she said, "It's really nice. I always wanted one." I smiled at her. "I know you did. When I saw it, I knew you'd like it." Slipping it on her wrist, she replied, "Where did you get it? It's so nice." "A lady at the Altoona store. She had a bunch of jewelry." She held her wrist out to look at the cuff. Smiling, she gave me a hug and a kiss. "It's very nice. Thank you. I love it." I squeezed her tight. "Love you too. Let's go get some dinner." We went over to Danny's, where those not otherwise occupied were gathering. Ian, Perez, and Mary were there, along with Danny and Bobby. Shortly after we arrived, Kay, Sarge, and Doc rolled in as well. Everyone was sitting on the back porch chatting when I made my escape and headed for the garden. While I would still be in view, I hoped to be able to get the rubber Angus out of my pocket. Once in the garden, I wandered around looking at the plants. Thad was doing an incredible job with them. They were growing strong and vibrant. The tomato plants had golf ball-sized green fruits in them. The peppers were already fruiting as well. The squashes had large, bright flowers. It wouldn't be long before they had fruits as well. Hearing laughter from the porch, I looked up. Everyone was wrapped up in some BS Sarge was telling, so I quickly knelt down and whipped the snake from my pocket. I couldn't help but smile as I thought about a line from Blazing Saddles. "Excuse me while I whip this out." I rolled the snake into a coil under the broad leaf of a yellow squash. I was chuckling to myself as I did it. Remembering Thad on the side of that lake, I couldn't help myself. Now, if he responds the same way this time, I'll probably shit myself. With my dastardly deed done, I headed up to the house.
We sat around and had dinner. Ian and Sarge kept taking shots at one another, which added some levity to the evening. Thad's shotgun was lying on the table in front of him, tucked inside of a leather scabbard. I pointed to it. "What's that?" Thad picked it up. "I made it from an old saddle I found in one of the sheds. The saddle was pretty torn up, but the base of it was nice leather. I've oiled the hell out of it, so it's really nice now." He handed it to me, and I inspected the work. Thad was a patient man and had obviously spent a lot of time on it. "Now I can sling it over my back and always have it with me," Thad added. I handed it back over. "Man, that's really nice. Can't believe it was an old saddle." "I know. He should go into the leather business," Danny added.
"Only one problem with that," Thad replied. "You need leather."
"Yeah, might be hard to get new material," Danny said.
"Not if we were in Wyoming," I replied. Both of them looked at me for an explanation.
"I talked to a guy on the radio out there. They're covered up with beef, more than they can eat."
"That'll be a hell of a problem to have," Sarge boomed.
"Wouldn't be a problem for me. I can eat my own weight in beef," Thad said with a smile. Perez looked sideways at him and asked,
"In one sitting?"
Thad started to laugh.
"I'll take a break in the middle and get a nap in."
"Man, I wish we had some beef," Ian said.
Florida was one of the largest beef producers in the country. "There still has to be some out there somewhere," I added.
"Thank you for dinner, Miss Bobby and Mary. I'm headed out to the garden for a bit," Thad said, as he rose from the table and slung the scabbard over his shoulder. Bobby pushed her bowl away.
"It wasn't much, but you're welcome."
"I'm coming too, Thad," Mary said, as she quickly got up from the table. As they left the porch and headed towards the garden, the women started talking about Thad and Mary spending so much time together. I waved at Sarge, and when he looked over, I pointed at the garden and mouthed the word, "Watch." Sarge's brow furrowed, but he leaned over to be able to see. Ian caught on that something was up and asked me as much. Smiling, I replied,
"Just watch. You'll see."
"Oh, you didn't really do that, did you?" Mel asked.
"What'd he do?" Kay asked. I turned back to her and Mel.
"Don't say anything. You'll see."
Thad and Mary made their way to the garden. Normally, Thad would kneel down in the garden to pull the stray weeds and talk to his plants. But with the recent rain, the ground was saturated, so he squatted instead. A smile spread over my face as I watched him work from the far end of the garden towards the squash plants. The tomatoes delayed him for a bit, as he and Mary picked worms from them. He painstakingly checked each and every leaf, removing the parasites as they were found. Thad carried a small cup with him, and he'd drop the worms in for feeding to the chickens later. The chickens love the worm treats. I leaned forward in anticipation as he got to the squash, any second now. But Mary got to it first. I saw her jump back and point. Thad looked down and backpedaled a couple of steps while reaching for the shotgun on his back. He quickly shouldered the old side-by-side as he pulled Mary out of the way. The shotgun went off with a roar, and Thad stood there for a moment. Then I saw his head turn to the side, and he stared intently for a moment. Then he reached down with the barrel of the gun and lifted the rubber snake up and inspected it. Realizing it was a rubber snake, his attention turned to the porch. It was still draped over the barrel when he shouted,
"You ain't funny, Morgan."
He looked back down into the garden, then back up.
"You're lucky there weren't any flowers on the side of that plant."
He tossed the snake into the yard before calling out,
"I'll get you back."
It didn't scare him, Little Bit said, as she sat back down at the table.
"Smooth move, X-Lax," Sarge barked. "You didn't even scare him."
"Ah, Mary saw it first. If he'd seen it first, he would have pooped himself." Choosing my words carefully because of Little Bit.
"I've seen it before,
and it's funny as hell. I suggest you start looking over your shoulder. That big man is going to break your ass in half, Perez offered. Looking to change the subject, I glanced at Doc.
How are Tyler and family?
Doc jerked his head.
Not good. He's sick, bad sick. Brandy is sick too, and will probably get worse.
How about the babies? Kay asked.
Doc rested his elbows on the table.
That's the funny thing. They appear to be fine. I would have expected them to get ill too, but they're okay. They want to go outside really bad, and Brandy and Tyler are having trouble taking care of them. Other than that, the kids are good.
Maybe we should get the kids out of there, Kay replied.
I'm still nervous about that. They could be infected and not yet symptomatic. I think we need to give it a little longer.
If they can't take care of them, then we're going to have to do something, Bobby said. Mel stood up from the table.
We can't let the kids suffer. They're in there watching their parents suffer. We should get them out.
We're getting some help tomorrow. Let's see what this clinic is capable of when it gets here. I know it's hard, but we can't risk exposing everyone here, Sarge replied.
Speaking of that, is it on for tomorrow? I asked.
Sarge nodded.
Yep. Talked to them right before we came over. The rain's moved out, and we're good to go tomorrow.
Good. We'll get some help then. Hopefully, it comes in time for some of those folks in town, Mel said.
Are they bringing any ammo? Ian asked.
Sarge nodded. Oh, yeah. I gave them a shopping list. We'll have to see what they bring. I doubt they will give us everything I asked for. Plus, with what we brought back from Riley, we should be in pretty good shape.
I'll take anything they give us, Perez added.
They're bringing some food out, too, I said.
That's good. We're getting low, really low, Bobby said, as she collected bowls from the table.
Don't hold your breath. We don't know what they're going to send out, I replied.
Ian stood up and stretched.
All right, Perez, time to go to work.
You guys on watch? I asked.
Perez moaned.
Yes. You relieve us at midnight.
Yeah, you and me, Danny added.
We'll be there, I replied with a smile. Have a good night.
I want to wait here for the girls, Mel said.
We'll go relieve them. I'm sure they're hungry, Ian said, as he collected his gear.
Ian and Perez left to change the watch, and Thad and Mary came back up on the porch. Thad had a look in his eye that was less than comfortable. He was pointing at me as he came through the door.
You think you're a funny man, he smiled, and added,
That's all right. I'll get even.
Ah, come on. It didn't even scare you, I replied.
It scared me, Mary said with a light giggle.
I wasn't trying to scare you. I'm sorry, I replied with a smile.
A sudden racket at the front announced the arrival of the girls. They were very loud, as if they were really pumped up about something. When questioned, they all said it was nothing, and they were starving. While they ate, we all chatted around the table. Doc soon announced he was tired and headed home. He reminded Mary about their trip to town in the morning. She said she'd be packed and ready to go on time. Sergeant Kay joined Doc, and everyone said their goodnights. As soon as our girls were done with their dinner, we also headed home.
I'll see you about midnight, I said to Danny, as I headed out the door.
He waved.
See you then.
The girls were still pretty wound up and carried on all the way home, though it wasn't far.
What's got you guys all spun up? I asked.
Nothing, Taylor said.
We're just glad to be able to help out. You know, do our part.
We walked for a minute before I replied.
You girls just be careful. This isn't a game.
We know. That's why we've been training with Ted. He's really good, Leanne replied.
Dalton scares me, Taylor said with a shiver.
He is kind of scary. He yells a lot, Leanne agreed.
He yells at you? Mel asked.
Taylor snorted. He yells at everyone.
I'd pay attention to him. From what I've seen, he's pretty good at what he does, I replied. We got into the house, and everyone headed for their rooms. Mel went and tucked Little Bit in, and soon we were in our room. I was tired, even though we had spent the afternoon snoozing. As the girls quieted down, I climbed into bed.
It's going to be hot tomorrow, I said, as I flipped the sheet back on the bed.
Why? It's been nice with the rain. Cooled things off.
The rain is why. It's going to be like being in a steamer.
Oh, great. Just what I need.
With a chuckle, I noted.
Well, babe, like I said, it only gets worse.
Mel jerked the sheet.
Well, aren't you just a little black rain cloud?
Chapter 12. I woke up about a quarter till midnight. Moving quietly, I got dressed and collected my kit before slipping out of our room. After getting my boots on, I grabbed a quick cup of tea and chugged it. The caffeine would help. Heading out the door, I woke the dogs up. They all got up, staggering around, and began yawning. I rubbed their heads and was rewarded with tail wags all around. When I headed out for the bunker, they fell in behind me and followed me silently down the road. With the rain now spent, the sky was clear, and I could see the stars shining brightly overhead. There were even more stars visible now, or so it seemed. But it only made sense. With nearly all man-made pollution gone, the sky was clearing up. It was like stepping back in time, to a time before the industrial age. Approaching the bunker, I could hear voices, certainly more than just Perez and Ian. Someone turned on the light as I approached.
"Hey, Morgan, look what we found," Mike said.
Turning his head, the light fell onto a man on the ground.
"Who the hell is that?"
"He's one of the people that's been watching us," Dalton said.
"Where'd you guys find him?"
"Dalton found a hide over behind Tyler's place. We laid up an ambush and managed to bag this turd," Ted replied.
I looked down at the man. He was wearing mismatched camo and worn sneakers. He had a camo ball cap on his head with the logo of some concrete company on it.
"He doesn't look like DHS to me," I said.
"He's not.
I think he's part of Billy's group," Ted said.
"He looks a little rough, even for that bunch."
"We'll find out soon enough. When the old man gets a hold of him, he'll talk," Mike said.
"He is persuasive," I replied.
The man never looked up, choosing instead to keep his eyes on the ground in front of him. I kicked his foot, but he still wouldn't look up. Looking at Ted, I said, "You guys taking him home with you?" Ted nodded, and I looked back at the man and kicked his foot again.
"Take my advice. Make it easy on yourself and just answer the questions. We're not going to kill you, but that old bastard will make you wish you were dead."
Mike grabbed the man by his arm and jerked him up.
"On your feet, shithead."
They led the man away towards their house, leaving me and Dalton in the darkness.
"You can take off. Danny will be here in a minute," I said to Dalton.
Dalton rolled his shoulders.
"I'm good. We laid in our hides for hours. I need to stand up."
I went down into the bunker and grabbed the NVGs from where they hung. Coming back outside, I fired them up and took a look around. With the clear sky, I could see quite well. Hearing footsteps, I looked back to see Danny coming down the road.
"Yo!" I called out.
He responded in kind. When he got to the bunker, we filled him in on the night's events. He listened to Dalton, then asked,
"How did you get him?"
"Oh, that was easy. He didn't come in until after dark, and we had night vision. We watched him walk up, and I just stood behind a big tree. He came diddy-bopping down the trail with his rifle slung over his shoulder. When he passed me, I just stepped out and quickly put him in a sleeper hold. Wasn't even a fight."
Danny laughed. You guys are nuts. I don't know if I could do that. Just reach out and grab someone.
It gets easier the more you do it.
Now it was my turn to laugh.
The more you do it. Just how many people have you put to sleep?
Dalton shrugged.
How many grains of sand on the beach?
Danny and I both laughed at the reply.
I can count how many I have. 3. Only people I ever put to sleep were my daughters when they were babies, I said.
Dalton cocked his head to the side and said,
You put your babies in a sleeper hold?
He laughed after making his little joke. I shook my head.
You are not right.
You going to hang out or go get some sleep? Danny asked.
I'll hang out. Might go in and take a nap in the bunker.
Go inside, and we'll hang out here, Danny replied.
Wake me up if something happens, Dalton said, as he ducked down into the bunker.
He came back out almost immediately with a bucket.
What the hell is this? Smells like piss.
I looked back. Dalton swirled the liquid around for a moment and sniffed it.
It is piss. Who the hell keeps a bucket of piss?
I laughed. I guess the girls used it for a latrine. Dalton walked over to the side of the road and dumped it.
We need to do something about this. That's just nasty.
I'll sort something out today. We need a way for the girls to go when they're up here, Danny said.
I'll help, Dalton said,
as he tossed the bucket to the side of the road and went back inside. Danny and I went to the front of the bunker and sat down on it. With the top rising above the ground, it was about the perfect height. We talked in soft whispers to kill the time. As always, we'd scan the area with the NVGs from time to time, but the night would thankfully prove to be uneventful. When the sky started to lighten in the east, I saw headlights swing out onto the road from one of the small side streets. I figured Sarge would be here early, but he was even earlier than I had anticipated. He pulled up beside us and stopped.
We're going to get Mary. Be right back.
I nodded, and he pulled off.
You guys going into town? Danny asked.
Yeah, I guess they're bringing in some stuff. The clinic is the most important. We'll see what they bring.
Thankfully, we haven't needed the clinic until that shooting. I hope it goes back to the way it was.
I looked over at him. We may not have needed it, but those folks in town sure do.
You keep messing with Thad, and you're going to need the clinic, Danny said with a laugh.
I laughed. You should have seen him when we were walking home. Thinking about it got me to really laughing. It was hilarious. When I asked what kind of snake it was, he replied,
It was a snake kind of snake.
Sarge pulled back up in the Hummer.
Saddle up, Buttercup. Time to make like a baby and head out.
I shook my head and couldn't help but smile.
They're getting worse by the day.
As I got in, I asked, You learn anything from that guy?
Sarge waved me off. I ain't even talked to him. He's stewing in his juices right now.
Sarge looked out at Danny.
Thad'll be up here shortly.
Danny nodded.
That's cool. Dalton's in the bunker asleep.
Just as he said that, Dalton emerged from the entrance. Rubbing his head, he said,
I was. You're a noisy-ass bunch.
Sarge looked over at me, then back at Dalton.
Damn, I should have become a psychiatrist.
Dalton looked at him and leaned back against the bunker, waiting for what was surely to come. Sarge didn't disappoint.
That way, I could get paid to pretend I give a shit.
Dalton chuckled.
Don't you have a leg to hump somewhere?
Sarge smiled.
That I do, and it ain't going to hump itself, he shouted, as he stomped on the gas and we pulled out.
I spun around and smiled at Mary.
Good morning. How are you doing out this early?
She smiled in return.
I'm good. I'm always up early.
I reached back and slapped Doc's leg. He ducked down through the turret.
Sup?
I smiled a broad, cheesy grin. Morning, sunshine. Doc shook his head, saying,
You ain't right,
and disappeared back up top. We headed out to 19 and towards Eustis. It was still very early, the sun just barely peeking above the horizon. The road was littered with debris from trees. The rain had pulled all manner of crap down. Other than the debris, though, the road was empty. We quickly passed the Kangaroo, and I saw one person there setting up for the day's trading. Seeing the market made me think of Mario and Shelley. It had been a little while since I had seen them. Maybe we'd go look them up on the way back. We made it to Eustis without issue. After pulling through the barricade, I wanted to see the progress of Cecil's crops. As we moved through town, it was obvious he'd been very busy. Every possible space in town that could be planted was. But studying the progress, it just didn't look like it would be enough. Even the green space where the old hospital once stood was planted. The corn was now poking out of the soil. But we needed more land, and I had an idea. Sheffield and Livingston met us as soon as we got out of the truck. They looked amped up and ready to go.
Plans changed a bit, Livingston said.
How so?
Sarge asked.
We're going to use the front parking lot as an LZ. The first Chinook will land there and unload. Once we move everything, the second one will sling in a bladder of fuel.
Sarge shrugged.
Whatever floats your boat.
Have you talked to them this morning?
Yeah, they're in the air already.
Then all we've got to do is wait,
Sarge replied as he climbed up onto the hood of the Hummer.
Have you seen Cecil this morning?
I asked.
Not yet. He'll be around later,
Livingston replied.
Shaking his head, he added,
That guy is something else. All he does is work. He doesn't stop.
I could see that coming in, but I don't think it's going to be enough.
Livingston looked surprised.
What do you mean? We've got crops planted everywhere.
Yeah, but there isn't more than an acre or two in any one place. We need more, a lot more. I've got a place in mind not far from here where there's probably 60 acres of open ground we could plant.
How far from here? Livingston asked.
Couple of miles up 19, not far.
How could we secure that?
It would just get picked clean at night.
I laughed.
That's why you'd have to position people over there, set up a camp, and cycle some of your people through it. Livingston swept his arm out.
We're already providing security for all the crops here.
True, but now that the Eustis PD is back in the picture, we can use them to keep an eye on things here. That will free up your people, and you can move some of them out to the other farm. Because it would be a farm.
Livingston thought about it for a minute.
I guess you're right. If the police step up, we could do that.
He looked at me.
But they have to stick around, no disappearing.
I think they will.
Seeing you guys here gave them the confidence to come back. I can't blame them for leaving. Hell, I would have done the same thing.
The thumping of an approaching Chinook ended our conversation. We moved around the armory to the north parking lot to watch as they came in. These machines always amazed me. The two huge rotors beating the air to carry the massive machine aloft was a sight to witness, from the ground anyway. I had no desire to ride in one. The thing looked to me like it defied the laws of physics, and I didn't want to be around if the law won. The two choppers came in and circled once before the leader began his descent to the parking lot. The pilot made it look so easy as he drifted down, sliding in sideways for the last bit as the tires connected with the asphalt. Sheffield and Livingston had their people ready, and they were at the back of the big machine as the loadmaster lowered the ramp. Several people ran down the ramp, and with the help of the crew and the guardsmen, the supplies inside were unloaded. The pilots stayed in the cockpit with the engines roaring, ready to take off in an instant. Some of the material was on pallets, and thankfully, Sheffield had come up with a couple of pallet jacks from somewhere. This really expedited the offload. Faster than I would have believed, the machine was empty. The crew chiefs were leaning out of their positions to make sure no obstructions created a hazard as the pilots applied power and the behemoth began to lift off. It wasn't long before it was climbing high into the sky and falling in behind the other with its sling load of fuel. Once the first machine was at altitude, the second began its approach. This one was a little different, as they didn't have to actually touch down. The pilot demonstrated exceptional skill as he brought the load slung beneath him in and seemed to make the load arrest its forward momentum right over the parking lot. As soon as the bladder was steady, he began to slowly drop it down while his two crew chiefs leaned out, calling distance to him. Once the bag was on the ground, someone inside released the cable holding it, and the machine began to climb up to join his wingman. The whole operation went fast and smoothly. I was surprised at how quickly it all happened, but in short order, we were standing in silence among the piles of material just delivered. Doc immediately found the medical personnel, and they were quickly sorting out where to put the clinic. Sheffield and Livingston joined the discussion, having their own ideas about where it needed to be. I stayed by the Hummer. None of this was up to me, and I thought it better if I just stayed out of the way. Sarge was still sitting on the hood, paying little attention to the activity. "Why aren't you helping them figure out where to set up?" I asked. Sarge leaned back, resting on his hands. "For the same reason you're not. It ain't my business." "I'm going to see if I can find Cecil," I said, as I looked around. Sarge hopped off the truck. "I'm going to go through some of this shit and find what's ours before these booger eaters steal it all." I left Sarge and headed off towards the gate. Quite a crowd had formed to watch the show this morning, and I had to make my way through them. As I did, I was peppered with questions. "What's on those helicopters?" a man asked as I passed him. I shrugged. "Army shit, I guess." "When are they going to bring in some food? We're starving," a woman shouted. "I don't know." I lied about that one.
"If they've got helicopters and stuff, they should be able to help us," another voice shouted.
I finally made my way through the crowd. I didn't see Cecil, but didn't really expect to. I had an idea where I could find him. I made my way towards the lake and the crops planted along its edge. I wandered along for a while, looking at the plants and their various stages of growth. It did look like a lot, and it would be for a family or two, but not for a whole community. In that context, it was woefully inadequate. I eventually found Cecil. Like me, he was wandering around the lakeshore, checking on his crops. The sun was finally up, and the price the rain brought from the heat would now come due. As I walked towards him, steam rose from the saturated ground as the sun climbed higher into the sky.
"Morning, Cecil. Looks like it's going to be a blister of a day."
Cecil looked up and smiled. In the way of some old men, he stood with his hands on the back of his hips and looked up.
"I think you're right. Sun's gonna boil all that water off, and it'll be like a damn jungle."
"The rain was nice, but it comes with a price," I replied with a chuckle. Cecil turned and looked back towards the armory.
"You boys get a delivery this morning?"
"They brought in a field hospital and some other stuff." Cecil nodded.
"That's good. Them poor people are suffering something terrible up there. When I saw those birds coming in, it reminded me of a little mountaintop fire base I was on in Vietnam. We called them things shithooks," he laughed. "I hated riding in them. Just seemed unnatural that the thing could or should fly."
I laughed. "I know what you mean. They say the bumblebees shouldn't be able to fly. Guess no one ever told them." Cecil gave out a laugh. I liked him. He was an easy person to be around.
"You just out inspecting the crops this morning?" he asked me.
No, actually, I was looking for you.
I looked around at the small patches of planted ground. I really don't think this is going to be enough for everyone here.
Cecil snorted.
Hell no, it ain't. I tried to tell that snot-nosed captain up there. But like all brass, he won't listen. You hang some color on an asshole's collar, and he thinks he knows it all. Sad part is, they usually don't learn until people are dead.
How much land do you think you could plant? I asked.
Cecil shrugged.
No limit, really. The deciding factor is fuel, manpower, and seed. We've still got quite a bit of seed.
Cecil winked and leaned in close, as if he were about to offer up a secret.
I've found more seed, by the way.
Surprised, I asked him,
where?
He smiled broadly, exposing large white straight teeth.
That's a need-to-know-only basis. And you don't need to know, Sheriff.
I chuckled at him.
As long as you know, I don't give a shit.
And that's how it should be, he barked in reply.
I've got an idea about a place we could plant. It's a lot of beautiful open land.
Where are you thinking?
I pointed north. You know where that big piece of property is on 44, just east of 19?
Cecil nodded.
Yeah, on the north side of the road there, across the road from the Trout Lake Center.
He paused and shook his head.
You ever hear of a dumber name for a lake in Florida? Trout Lake. There ain't no trout in that damn lake.
He cracked me up.
You're right about that. Always thought the same thing. But that is the place I'm talking about.
Cecil rubbed his chin as he thought about it.
That's awful far from here. It'd probably get picked clean before we ever got the first bean from it. I've already talked to old Snotnose. They've agreed to station some soldiers there to provide security. We could also move some folks in there to tend to everything.
Cecil's eyes went wide.
I've spent my time sleeping in a damn army tent. I ain't doing it.
He really was funny.
I didn't mean you.
You go up there and get it going. Use some folks from town here. Once the seeds are in the ground, you can just go up and check on it from time to time to make sure everything is going smoothly.
Cecil calmed down a bit.
Well, that sounds all right. For a minute there, I thought you were losing your full mind.
Laughing, I replied,
can't say that isn't happening, but I'm not trying to get you to sleep under canvas either. We need to go take a look at the land. I've seen it 100 times, but never actually looked at it. Come on, let's get a ride.
We walked back to the armory. I found Sarge at the Hummer piling ammo cans into the back. When he saw us, he bellowed,
where the hell have you been?
I laughed.
You ain't my daddy. I don't have to tell your old ass what I'm doing.
Thank God. If I knew I was responsible for bringing something as ugly as you into this world, I'd cut my pecker off.
You done? I asked with a smile.
We need to get this shit loaded up. That damn Sheffield is trying to keep all my shit, and I ain't having it.
Cecil smiled.
Morning, Top.
Morning, Cecil,
Sarge replied curtly.
He knows some of this is ours, I said.
Yeah, well, he suddenly got a fat fucking head about things, Sarge spat back.
Doc walked up with a couple of boxes under each arm.
Here are some med kits to take back to the ranch.
He tossed the boxes into the back of the truck.
They giving you any trouble? I asked.
Doc looked up and shook his head.
No. They're great folks over there. There are a couple of engineers here, too. They're helping set up the clinic tent now, and said they need to get with you after that.
All right. Tell them I'll find them later.
Come on, Morgan. We need to get the rest of what's ours, Sarge barked.
Calm down. It isn't us versus them. We're all in this together, I replied, as I followed him.
At the edge of the parking lot, the pallets that came off the chopper were being sorted. Sheffield and Livingston were there directing the action. Sarge moved in like a bull in a china shop and grabbed a large green case.
"Hey, that stays here," Sheffield shouted.
"Like hell it does,"
Sarge shouted back. He tilted the case to expose the label.
"You don't even have a damn goose to fire these with."
"Like you do?"
Sheffield shouted back.
"Of course I do. What the hell do you think I requested the ammo for?"
Sheffield shook his head.
"What? Where the hell did you get it?"
"None of your damn business. These are mine, and I'm taking them."
This was going downhill fast. Like Christmas morning at an orphanage. Get it while the getting's good. I stepped between them.
"Come on, Captain. You know we went to Camp Riley and requested all this stuff. We made sure to get you guys some supplies, but we need ours as well. We've already had one run-in with a DHS MRAP. If the Apaches hadn't arrived, we'd have been toast. This is to make sure that doesn't happen again."
Sheffield threw his hands up.
"Fine. You two sort this shit out."
Sarge stiffened and looked at Sheffield.
"Ah, poor fucking baby. You gonna take your ball and go home now?"
That did it. I watched as Sheffield's head turned red. The blood boiled up out of his collar and over his ears.
"What did you say to me? You seem to forget, First Sergeant, that I'm a captain in the United States Army, and you will address me accordingly."
All work had stopped as everyone within earshot was now watching the show. Sarge guffawed.
"And you seem to forget, Captain, that I'm retired and don't give a fuck."
Sheffield lunged for the old man and crashed into me. Sarge likewise went for Sheffield. I pushed Sheffield back and turned to face Sarge. He was looking right through me with a crazed expression in his eyes. He tried to go around me, and I grabbed his rifle and used it as a handle to swing him back around. With the two separated, I started shouting,
"You two, knock it the hell off! What's wrong with you guys? We're on the same team here. We've got to work together, or we're all screwed. I don't care which one of you has the bigger pecker, and neither do the people here. You fuckers made me sheriff, so knock it the hell off, or I'll lock both your asses up."
Both men stopped and stared at one another. Sheffield looked around at the supplies scattered around. Food, ammo, medical equipment, and other gear. He rubbed his temples for a minute, then looked at Sarge.
"I'm sorry for being a dick. There's just so many people to take care of, it's stressing me out."
"Hell, I know that. That's why I requested all this. We didn't get everything, but we got more than I thought we would. I know you don't like me, Captain, but I really am trying to help you," Sarge replied.
"It's not that I don't like you. You're just a little cavalier in your attitude. I pity the COs you worked for."
"Some people talk. Some people do. If the machine gets in the way, go around it or through it. I don't care which. I take care of my people, by any and all means at my disposal."
"I know," Sheffield replied.
He stepped toward Sarge and stuck his hand out. Sarge spun his heels to face away from him. I rolled my eyes and thought, "Ah, shit, here we go again." Sarge looked at the soldiers, still gawking, and shouted,
"Company, form up!"
The soldiers shared looks around, but no one moved. Sarge gritted his teeth.
"What the hell's wrong with you, booger eaters? I said form up!"
As a Chinese fire drill erupted before me, Sarge continued to shout,
"Move, move, move!"
Once the troops were formed up, Sarge called the assembly to attention.
"Contrary to my actions here this morning, I have nothing but respect for Captain Sheffield. He is the CO of this post and will be addressed and treated accordingly."
Sarge spun on his heels again to face Sheffield.
"Captain Sheffield, I apologize for my actions this morning."
With that, Sarge snapped in a crisp salute. Sheffield looked at him for a moment,
and I prayed he'd return the salute quickly. After a moment, Sheffield came to attention.
"Your apology is accepted, First Sergeant."
Sheffield dropped the salute, and Sarge did likewise. He then spun on his heels to face those assembled.
"Dismissed!"
The assembly broke up, and everyone got back to work, though the display obviously confused some of them. Sheffield walked up to Sarge and offered his hand again.
"Thank you for that show of support."
Sarge grabbed his hand and pulled him in close. With a wink, he said,
"Don't get used to it."
Sheffield chuckled.
"Believe me, I won't."
"Are you two done with the pecker measuring contest now? I've got things to do," I said. Sarge smiled a sickly sweet smile at me that I knew to be complete bullshit.
"Of course, Sheriff. What can we do for you?"
"I want to take Cecil to look at some new dirt for planting." Sarge clapped his hands.
"Let's go then."
Then his expression changed, an unnerving look I couldn't quite place.
"Lock my ass up, huh?"
"In a heartbeat. I'll knock you in the head and throw your old ass in the hoosegow." Sarge's eyes narrowed.
"You'd have a better chance of getting a job as a break-in man at a whorehouse."
Then he smiled and slapped my shoulder.
"Come on, let's go look at your patch of dirt."
Mike was rummaging around in the garbage. Bucket in hand, he went through the tools on the tidy workbench. Finding something that caught his eye, he'd hold it up and inspect it. Then he'd steal a glance at the figure hanging from a rope in the center of the garage, and drop the tool in the bucket. In true Sarge fashion, he'd had the guys truss the man up. They had to open the scuttle hold to the attic in order to hang the rope from a truss, but it worked out, and he was now slowly swiveling back and forth. The man watched Mike, but tried to remain calm, at least outwardly. He knew the kinds of things he'd done to people, mostly just for fun. These guys were going to want answers, and it certainly appeared they intended to get them. But he wouldn't make it easy on them. Sure, they'll get what they want, but they damn sure were going to have to work for it. Mike picked up a medium-sized pair of channel locks. Opening his mouth, he tested to see if they would grab a tooth. Of course he knew they would. And he also knew there was very little chance of that actually occurring. But it looked good. Seeing they could clamp on, Mike smiled at his prisoner before dropping them into the bucket with a clank. It had the desired effect, and the man spoke for the first time.
"Why don't you get on with it already?"
Mike held a finger to his lips and shook his head.
"What the hell are you waiting for?" the man asked.
Mike tapped his finger to his lips again, then waved it at the man. The man struggled for a moment, though it wasn't much of an effort. With his feet a full foot off the ground, all he could really do was gyrate his body a little.
"Come on, what the hell?"
Mike carried the bucket over and set it down so his prisoner could see into it, though far enough back that he couldn't get to it with his feet. He looked the man in the eyes, smiled broadly, and walked into the house. His actions had the desired effect as the man stared down into the bucket. His mind raced with the possibilities of the instruments displayed before him, but one in particular put real fear in him. Lying on top of the pile was a drywall saw. Its jagged, shark-like teeth glared at him, and he could already feel it tearing its way inside him. Thad and Danny took turns in the hole. They decided to dig a conventional latrine. Dalton had suggested a basic slit trench to make things easier. Luckily for the girls, though, they disagreed. Dalton stood watch for them as they worked on the side of the road not far from the bunker. Thad had suggested putting the latrine in the woods a short distance from the bunker, but Dalton overruled that idea, pointing out it had to be within eye and earshot. It would be a primitive affair consisting of a small wooden box with a hole cut in the top, resting over the pit. They thought of using a bucket, but it would be tricky to mount it so as to prevent the bucket from falling into the hole. Danny had already made the box out of scrap plywood. Only the front of it was covered for obvious reasons. And there was the top with the hole to serve as a seat.
"Once we get this deep enough, we can work on an enclosure for it," Thad said, as he tossed a spade of dirt onto the pile.
"I was thinking of just planting some posts and wrapping it in black plastic. I've got a roll," Danny replied. Thad stopped working and looked up.
"Why don't we just thatch it with palmettos? Save the plastic for times we really need a waterproof barrier."
Danny nodded. "That's a good idea. We may end up really needing the plastic at some point. Probably should save it." Thad smiled.
"It'll be a tiki shithouse."
"I'd avoid the coconuts in there if I were you, lads," Dalton shouted.
Danny and Thad both laughed.
"Yeah, avoid all the nuts you find in there," Danny added.
He and Thad traded places in the hole that was now about waist deep. Thad went off to cut palmetto fronds while Danny finished off the hole.
"Do you ever take a break?" Danny asked Dalton as he worked the shovel.
Dalton shrugged.
"I'm on a break now. You're the one in the hole with a shovel in your hands. This isn't work just standing here."
"You always seem to be switched on. I don't think I could live that way. Seems like it would wear you down after a while."
"It's not like you think. Or maybe it is, actually. I've always been this way. Even before things went to shit. I worked in prisons for years, and in that environment, you have to be switched on. All the time."
Dalton waved his arm.
"So this is just normal to me."
Danny shook his head.
"I'm getting used to it, but it's far from normal."
Dalton laughed.
"Imagine what it was like when I was around people all the time. This is easy."
Thad returned with a massive ball of fronds over one shoulder. Danny laughed at him. He looked for all the world like some poor bastard from India toting the load. Like something out of a National Geographic.
"Damn, Thad. You know we can make more than one trip, right?"
Thad dropped the load.
"Sure, but I want to get this done today."
"We need something for the frame. You stay here, and I'll go see what I can find," Danny said. Thad nodded and went to the water keg. Danny wandered off to see what he could find to frame up the new shitter. He found a thick stand of sumac and started cutting. He checked each piece before doing so to make sure there were no flower heads in them. There were several large red clusters of the small flowers that would make a refreshing drink later in the summer. Even with the extra caution, he ended up with a large stack of fairly straight stalks. Pulling a piece of paracord from his pocket, Danny tied a loop in one end and ran it under the stack. Once they were tied up, he hoisted them onto his back and carried them back to the latrine. When he arrived, the girls were there with Eric. They seemed to move in a pack now, always together. Taylor was looking at the hole and asked, "What's this?"
"It's your new toilet," Dalton replied.
Jamie looked around.
"Where's our bucket?"
"No more piss buckets in the bunker. You'll have to use the latrine now."
"Oh yeah, we should have emptied that," Jess said with a smile.
"This will be better than a bucket. You'll have some privacy, and it's sanitary," Thad said.
"Yeah, why don't you girls come over and help?" Danny said. They rolled their eyes, but did help. The sumac stalks were laid out and formed into a lattice. Four of these were created. Three of them were used for sides, and the last for the top. The open side faced the woods, maintaining a little privacy. Once the frame was up, Thad showed the girls how to weave the stem of the fronds into the lattice. With so many hands working on the weaving, Thad kept them supplied with fronds, and they quickly had the exterior covered. The roof was thatched on the ground and placed on top. Danny grabbed a couple of long palmetto stems, cutting the fronds off. Pulling his knife, he ran the blade down the edge, cutting all the thorns off, He then made a slit in the end and pulled the edge piece off. The process was repeated a couple of times until he had a handful of them.
"What are you going to do with that?" Thad asked.
Danny held one up.
"Tie the roof on."
Thad took the thin strip.
"Really?"
"It's really strong," Danny replied.
Thad gripped the piece in his hands and tugged on it. Raising his eyebrows, he pulled harder. Seeing it hold, he wrapped it around his hands and really pulled. It still didn't give.
"Dang, that stuff's tough," Thad said with a nod.
"Told you. It's also really flexible. You can tie up just about anything with it."
The two picked the roof up and set it on top of the walls. Using the strips, they tied the roof on. Once they were done, they stepped back and looked at their work. Danny asked the girls, "What do you think?" Jess went around to the opening on the back side and looked in. Looking back at Danny, she smiled.
"Nice toilet seat."
"Better than a bucket," Danny replied.
The rest of the girls gathered around to inspect it. As they were talking, Dalton waded into the group shouting,
"Make way! Make way! I shall christen this throne!"
Assuming a spread-legged stance, he reached for his belt buckle and shouted,
"I shall purge the temple!"
"Ew!"
Leanne shouted as she ran off. Jess pushed him.
"Oh, no, you don't!"
Dalton started laughing uproariously. Catching his balance, he said,
"I'm just kidding."
"You better be. That's for us ladies," Fred said. "You guys can pee on the ground." Squinting one eye, Dalton said,
"I wasn't going to pee."
When Fred realized what he was saying, she looked almost like she was shocked.
"Ew!"
With a surprised look, Dalton replied,
"What? Like you don't?"
She flipped her hair. "No, as a matter of fact, I don't." Eric started to laugh.
Yeah, she does."
Fred spun on her heels and pointed at him.
"Shut it, mister."
Still laughing, he replied,
"I'm outnumbered right now."
Everyone inspected the new latrine and voiced their approval. The thatching was done in a shingle method, tightly enough that it should shed all water. Close enough to the bunker for security reasons, yet far enough away to allow for some privacy. The girls volunteered to take over the watch so the guys could get some rest.
"Where's Jamie?" Danny asked.
"She's with Ian somewhere. They said they were going to creep around," Jess replied.
"I'm going to check on our new guest," Dalton said, as he shouldered his rifle. "I'm going to muck out the pig pen. Need some fertilizer for the garden," Thad said.
"Need a hand?" Danny asked.
Thad nodded.
"Can always use a hand shoveling shit."
"You're going to spread pig poop on the garden?" Taylor asked. Thad smiled.
"Makes the plants grow big."
Taylor grabbed her stomach.
"I don't think I can eat stuff from the garden now." "You get hungry enough, you'll be surprised what you can eat," Thad replied.
"You guys keep your eyes open," Danny said, as he collected the shovels.
"We will, don't worry," Fred replied, as she ducked into the bunker.
Danny and Thad headed for the barn. As they walked, Thad said he had an idea he wanted to run past Danny.
"What is it?"
"I want to try and get water hooked up over here," Thad replied.
"That would be nice, but we don't have enough solar panels and batteries."
"We don't need power."
Danny looked over.
"How are you going to pump the water?"
Thad smiled.
"Gravity."
Skeptically, Danny replied,
"Okay. I found another one of those big tanks like we have on the fire trailer. I also found some large poles, like telephone poles. I figured we could use them to make a platform about 10 feet high to set the tank on. Fill the fire tank from the well and use the pump to push it into the tank on the platform. Running water."
"How would we get the tank up there? They're not super heavy, but we couldn't lift it that high by hand."
Thad winked.
"That's the easy part. We'll use the tractor to pick up the tank, chain it to the bucket, and I can set it right up there.
Danny thought about it for a moment. All we'd have to do is run some pipe to each house and tie it in. That much water would have some good pressure.
Exactly. We could flush the toilets, use the showers.
Danny smiled.
Be some cold showers.
Thad looked up.
You kidding me? I'll take a cold shower. I already sweat like a crooked politician on election day. Besides, sitting out in the sun, it will heat up some.
As they walked, they talked about the project some more. Thad said there were enough poles for the four corners. They just need some cross bracing. Danny suggested pulling some of the treated fence posts from around the neighborhood. A couple places there had almost new posts. They agreed the platform would need to be made from posts as well to support the weight.
After we're done with this little task,